a person takes poison, knowing that it can kill him sometime in the future, but stops before it actually kills him, or he dies from some other way, he's still in sin from taking that poison. See, the issue is not whether you die immediately, but by taking something that you know is harmful to you, tattooing, damaging your body, it's not allowed. Shifting the teeth around in your mouth. This is something dentists should keep in mind, right? Shifting the teeth around in your mouth for cosmetic purposes. This is not allowed. If it is because you don't have a proper bite and it's wearing away at teeth, and so it's also for correcting something, it's okay. But if it's just the person comes in and says, you know, I like a space between my two front teeth. You know, I think it looks nicer. No, you're not allowed to do this. It's not allowed. Okay. So certain, you know, acts which involve damaging, harming the body, breast implants, and things like this. This is not permissible. Chewing tobacco leads to cancer of the tongue, cancer of the throat, cancer of the lip.
And eating chilies and fried meat also should not be taken. That also harms the heart.
No, wait a minute now. Okay?
It produces heart disease.
No. It doesn't produce heart disease in and of itself. You see? Make a distinction between halal things which are taken in excess. Okay? Halal things which are taken in excess, they can produce harm. And to take them in excess, knowing they can produce harm, is haram. This is wrong. Because you are acting in a way which will hurt your body. But the substance in and of itself, whether it is, fats or fried foods, etc., these were never harmful to the people of the past. They were harmful to people today, why? Because one, they eat in excess. The people then ate more moderately. They're eating in excess, and their lives are sedentary lives. They're just sitting in front of the television, couch potatoes, No activity in their life. So when you don't have any activity which breaks down, then these things can become harmful to you. So it is the lifestyle. The doctors will tell you, it is not the food itself which is harmful, it is the lifestyle which then makes that food harmful to you. So the difference between, the halal things can be haram when they're taken to excess. You see, and they can be harmful to us, making it haram when taken to excess. Also, a halal thing for a given individual may be haram. If, for example, you are a diabetic, and the doctor instructs you that if you take more than so much sugar, it will cause you to become comatose and you can die from it. For you to take more than that amount becomes haram, because you're taking something that you know can kill you. You follow? So in that circumstance, sugar is haram. Sweet, knowingly, then it is an act of suicide. And suicide in Islam is haram.
Sheikh, there's a few problems that are like unique to our problems in this part of the world, this community. One of the things in terms of Maharaja treats problems, and it's all of the serious psychological baggage or problems that we bring to our marriages. The serious emotional problems as a school teacher working with young people, most people have a lot of psychological problems from their childhood, a lot of emotional psychological problems. There are issues, of course, of people, couples marry each other with children, and the problems, the psychological problems, the emotional problems of marrying and of some, maybe one of the partners don't really know how to deal or with the problem of someone having children. In our community, some other problems like over the years of misunderstanding among ourselves, what has happened is that the respect level among Muslims is just beginning to rebound. So what you have now is when you have problems, people are being very reluctant to take it somebody, because actually, generally speaking, there's very little respect for anybody. So you tend to try to deal with your problems yourself.
But we need to, let's take it issue by issue and look for solutions, right? You're identifying a series of problems. I won't remember all of these, right? So maybe better to just take one issue and look to see how can we resolve this issue. Take it issue by issue.
Because it's all one basic solution. I'm just kind of identifying some of the things that people got to deal with. Many times, psychological problems that we bring in, lack of respect for each other. Next one is a lot of brothers have misunderstanding of their role as men within the family in terms of a man is a man who I wear the pants, and that's actually abuse. A man is one who abuses, and he misinterprets that to mean guidance. Okay, so because of these problems, marriage becomes very difficult. Another problem is less, but it's real in a small society for people that have converted to Islam. Boredom, in that after a couple of weeks or months, young couples don't have any activities in terms of to be involved with the younger person. Now, some of the older persons in the community, basically they know certain things, But actually, these problems contribute a lot of problems. But the first two are the major. The baggage that people bring in, which is some serious baggage, all of us, psychological, emotional, and the fact that people basically don't have the kind of respect to go to other people to help them.
Okay, regarding the psychological problems or the baggage that people bring into relationships with them, this isn't something new. Right? It's not something peculiar to our times. This is something which has existed since time, as they say, immemorial. That people who come into relationships, depending on their own personal upbringing, they will have certain experiences, etc., which affect their own behavioral patterns, etc., which they're going to bring in with them to the marriage. Of course, it may have been less in the past, especially in Muslim-type families, because of the fact that the upbringing was Islamic, more Islamic, so this brought you had dealt with people who were healthier, psychologically they were healthier. So, but of course, no family escapes some things, some errors, etc., which may affect the children and some of their behaviors. But we can say in our time, maybe it is greater. It's much greater because of the fact that we're coming out of non-Muslim, many of us are converts or reverts, whatever, coming out of non-Muslim environment, which, had with it many, many other problems, right? Or from dysfunctional Muslim families, where the people were not practicing, so really we were growing up on our own. So what can we do to minimize the negative effects of these problems in the case of marriage. I would say that probably the best solution for that would be to have some training, for example, people trained in the community in marriage counseling, who can, I mean, it's not say you're going to take all the ideas and such from the West, but they have developed a methodology, you know. We can benefit from their methodology, have Islamic input and from Islamic methodology, put that together, and advise couples that people, when they come into Islam, they don't just rush into marriage. You know, this is what sometimes happens to a person, just accepts Islam and brother marries her right away, finish. You know, or brother comes into Islam, first thing brother, get married. You know, it may not be the one thing to, they need to grow in Islam first. People, you should be given a chance to grow in Islam, to understand Islam better, etc., etc. And when marriage is going to be contemplated, then there should be some kind of counseling. Somebody to help to counsel those who are going to be involved in marriage. And, I mean, this is why there is supposed to be for the woman, you know, a representative, a guardian. In the case of Muslim family, they have a wali. But where there's no Muslim family, no Muslim male who can act within her family in that capacity, then it's somebody who stands in that place. And that purpose of that is also to help to understand this person, give that person guidelines and guidance, and to know the person who is intended, and to give that person, you know, advice and so on. That these instruments should be clearly in place. You know, what we're having in many cases are people getting married, and the especially in the case of the women, the person who should be there checking that woman out, and the person who's presenting the marriage, is not fulfilling that role. You know, the guardianship aspect for women in marriage is virtually no. I think this is common in many circumstances. So I think by having a body to counsel those who are coming into marriage, to give them advice, and, you know, the sisters can deal with the sisters going into their backgrounds a bit, trying to find out, you know, how they grew up, the problems that they face, and, you know, to help them to come to grips with their backgrounds and things like this, to help prepare them for marriage. We need some kind of structure like that. I mean, given our thoughts, we can say it's not from the Sunnah. They don't really have this, you know, practice of the Sahaba, etc. But these are unique circumstances which didn't exist in those times as they exist today. So the idea of having a body in the community to help other members of the community in case of marriage, etc., is quite legitimate. The other thing which relates to wives and husbands coming into marriages with children is something which people need to know. You know, what are the responsibilities involved? A man marries a woman who has children. It's not his responsibility to maintain and look after those children. They're not his. Technically, according to the law, it is her previous husband's responsibility. Or, if she was married, the children also may be from, you know, relationship out of wedlock. Now the man, knowing that the father of those children is not going to fulfill those roles, he, coming into that situation, has to come in knowing that that responsibility will fall on him. Knowing that he cannot expect what isn't there. So he's marrying that woman, he's marrying the woman and her children. He has a responsibility now, by way of the fact that the society is not providing the support for those children, that he will have to do it. He will have to take that into account. So people need to be educated to what degree are their responsibilities here, and to, you know, to be clear on it. When you're coming in, this is what's ahead of you. You know, if you don't think you can really deal with these children, then don't go into this relationship. Again, counseling, helping the people, you know what they're coming into, what is expected of them. In terms of lack of respect of community leaders, I mean, this is people having struggled together over a period of time, you know, bad feelings have developed in the past, which people tend to carry on into the future. You know, this is sad. People are doing it. But ultimately, all we can do is just try to encourage people to put these things aside. This is general nasiha, or advice which the community has to give to all of its members. You know, we have to put away these feelings, these ill feelings of things of the past. You know, they're usually due to misunderstandings. The people you're dealing with are not evil people. I mean, they're people who made mistakes in the past. Maybe they can't see the mistakes. Maybe you still see it and they can't accept it as a mistake. Then you have to leave it. Leave it to Allah. And on the day of judgment, it will be resolved. You know, in this life, we got to put it aside and carry on. You know? As one of the companions narrated, that on one occasion he was sitting in a group with the Prophet ﷺ in a masjid, and the Prophet ﷺ announced to the circle that the next person walking into the masjid is among the people of paradise. So all the companions waited to see who was the next one coming in. The next person, he came in, made his 2 rak'ah, came and sat down with them. MashaAllah, you know. Nobody said anything to him, MashaAllah. But the companion who was narrating this incident, he wanted to know why. Why was this person going to be of the people of paradise? So he decided he was going to be, you know, his companion. He just hung with him. Everywhere he went, he would go eat with him, you know, stay over his house, you know, pray. Everywhere he went, he was there with him. After he stuck with him for a week or two, you know, sleeping over his house, you know, he sat with him and he said, well, you know, I've been with you now for this past week or two, and I haven't seen you doing any extra prayers. I mean, okay, you're doing the fard and you're doing the sunnah, you know, few extras here and there, but no special, like, you know, tahajjud every night. And no, I'm not seeing you doing this. You know, I don't see you doing any extra special fast. You know, the extras that are generally recommended you do. You know, and he went on through the different things. He said, I can't see anything special. And so what is it? You know, what? So he said, well, he said, the only thing that, you know, I could say, you know, personally, that, I mean, I have tried to, you know, maintain in my life, right, is that when I go to sleep at night, I go to sleep without having any ill feeling towards anybody. He goes to sleep with a heart that is, you know, a loving heart at peace with the society. No ill feeling towards anybody. You know, this is something that we need to remember. I mean, because of that, Prophet ﷺ said he is a man of paradise. And we say we want paradise. So we have to be able to put these things aside. We have to put the bad feelings of the past, these things aside, because ultimately it's only hurting us. When we go to bed with these feelings in our hearts, it's only ourselves we're hurting. We're not hurting that person anymore. Yeah. Ultimately, we're hurting ourselves. And with regards also to the issue you mentioned of the roles, the male misconception of what it means to be a man, I mean, this again comes back down to education. You know, we need to advise people going into marriage, you know, that these are the images that we've learned out in the society. This is not applicable in Islamic context within marriage. So I think the counseling, some marriage counseling, if there's a problem, you know, that so many breakdowns in marriage, so many problems, etc., then we obviously do need some kind of body to help, you know, advise people who are going into marriage, as well as advise those who are in it, you know, and are finding problems, etc. Oh, you had to mention something else about boredom. I think that this will be exaggerated when families are not in communication with each other. You know, when the man and woman get married and they isolate themselves from the rest of the community, then the chances of boredom increases. Where the women are in contact with other Muslim women involved in Islamic activities, then similarly the brothers involved in Islamic activities with the other parts of the community, then this is fulfilled. Of course, you know, there needs to be, and I'm sure there are to some degrees, you know, certain community activities, picnics and things like this, and, you know, other, I don't know if you're doing it or not, but camps, etc. You know, there are different activities that we can, we should have in the community where the members, you know, are in contact, social contact with each other. You know, this especially becomes important, as you said, because we are living in a non-Islamic society, and much of the ways of entertainment are forbidden to us.
I have two questions. Here one, I think the Rashida is going to take one out there in the shop. My first question is in relation to, we have a small community. There's a tremendous amount of talk about polygamy. You didn't touch anything of it in the topic, but in your presentation. But however, it's something that brothers love to talk about and smile about it. And sisters seems to, I'm ready for that. They talk about it, or when they talk about it, they sort of saying, they put a different slant to it. Some of them say, I live all my life with you, now you want to come share what we have with somebody else, and so forth and so on, and this Islamic thing. But just as a small growing community to have this type of talk, right? Maybe you can just give some nasiha, some advice in that direction. And I have another question, but I'll give it to Brother Rashid on the left and then come back to me, inshallah.
If somebody doesn't ask before you. Regarding polygyny, which is the proper name for it really, because polygamy means either a man having more than one wife or a woman having more than one husband. Actually, this is just a technical point. Huh? Yeah, the proper, a man having more than one wife is called polygyny, and a woman having more than one husband is called polyandry. And both, are together, lumped together and called polygamy. Huh? But we just say in any case, polygamy, everybody knows it's polygamy, but I'm just giving you this technical point. Anyway, the point is that Islam did not ordain polygyny. It did not make it compulsory for Muslims. It recognized a form of marriage among the different forms and approved of it with some limitations. Other forms, it forbade. There was polyandry going on there in Arabia at the time. There are a variety of other marriage forms. It rejected most and approved two forms. What we know as the male proposing with dowry from the side of the male with the witnesses, which was a permanent contract of marriage, not temporary marriage, and also the extension where the man may marry more than one. Actually, it is lumped together as one. It's really just one marriage. All of the principles that we spoke about here are applicable to a man with one wife or a man with two wives. The principles of love and compassion and obedience and maintenance, all of this exists with one wife or more than one wife. The only additional factors which come in is that justice must be maintained between the two, that they must be dealt with justly, equally where it is possible, in the case of time, justly, where it comes to maintenance, etc., depending on the sizes of the family, etc. And it is something which Allah has ordained and permitted. So the same ruling that we mentioned, that it is not befitting for the believing man or woman, if Allah and His Messenger have decided in a matter, that they have any choice, meaning that we reject polygamy. We don't like it, yes. That a woman may express dislike for it. Islam doesn't say it is sinful for her to dislike it. The wives of the Prophet, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, did not happily welcome in the next wife that came after them. They accepted it in the end. But, you know, if you read the life of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam's wives, you see that sometimes they plotted and connived, trying to, you know, sabotage some of the Prophet's marriages. I mean, this is real. Okay? So, the issue of liking or not liking is not the issue. The issue is that it is permissible where the male is able to maintain more than one family, maintain them justly, fairly, it is permissible. And for the women, if their husbands decide to take that step, Islam doesn't say they cannot discourage, you know, to tell their husband, no, you know, don't do it now, leave it for later, or whatever excuse they want to, you know, put to him. They can discuss it with him, try to discourage him, etc. It's permissible. But in the end, if he decides that he wants to go ahead, then they have to accept it. In the end, this is the bottom line, they have to accept it. Of course, if they feel it becomes so unbearable that they cannot deal with it, and they want a divorce, I mean, this is not recommended, but it is an option that is there for them. It is an option. So, what they have to come to grips with ultimately, what both husbands and wives have to come to grips with, is what is the goal of their marriage. If the goal of the marriage is material security and well-being and comfort, then of course they will not be fulfilling half of their religion with marriage, and likely they will not be pleasing Allah. That marriage will not be the one which Islam has prescribed. It will be a marriage of Muslims and not a Muslim marriage. If, on the other hand, the people involved recognize that the ultimate purpose is to worship Allah, to serve Allah, and that what has been made permissible should be accepted and we can work with, that is part of the test of this life, the wives of the Prophet, the wives of the companions, may God peace and blessing be on all of them, of the leading scholars, etc., of the past, they adjusted, they accepted, they lived with it, and they were rewarded. That if a woman stays in a polygynous relationship rather than leaves it and is patient, continuing to fulfill her duty to Allah and contributing to the marriage as she should or as she was doing, that she will be rewarded. She will be rewarded for that patience, for sure.
On that point, before I make this decision, I'm sure this is not the case with everybody else. Okay? But this is my opinion based on my association with Muslim males, and that doesn't fit everybody. This question of polygamy, as you know, a man can marry for whatever reason. He can even marry for the wrong reason. In other words, when I say a wrong reason, I mean Allah says in the Quran, we should not marry them for lust, right?
No, to fulfill a desire, but within the context of marriage, this is not illegitimate. No, it's not.
All right, yeah. All right. But the point I'm want to make is that over the years, right? Put it this way: but we males in the Bahamas, generally speaking, general statement, are not known for being loving
Where people have the means, you know, in large numbers, like Saudi Arabia and others, still, the numbers of those who are practicing polygyny, 10-15%, maximum 20%. It's going to be a minority, a small group in the community. Now, the desire on the part of men to practice polygyny is normal. Whether you want to identify it as being their lack of care for their existing spouses or whatever, you know, these factors, I mean, the fact is that it is natural to the vast majority of men. Allah has put that as a part of their makeup. And it is got biological, psychological, sociological, you know, reasons for its existence. So this is a part of the nature. Now, the Islam invites us to marriage within certain bounds with checks and guidelines, etc. And as long as the community strives to maintain those, then those who will actually practice polygyny will be few. So it's really not something that, you know, deserves
a lot of argument about, because no one can say it's not permissible here in the Bahamas because Bahamian males are this way or that way. No, no one can say that. Allah has made it permissible, it is permissible. If one fulfills the requirement, it's permissible. And it will be a test for that individual, no matter how good his first marriage is and everything is tight and everything is fine and his wife even agrees. And he takes a second wife. You can find that, you know, after some time, then the second wife may change. Or the first wife may change. The attitude and so on. It's a test. Just as when a man marries his first wife. And before they got married, they may have been discussed and everything seems fine and perfect and all okay. After they get married, they start to live together and they start to find things coming up. I don't like the way he leaves his toothpaste. You know, he doesn't put the cap back on, you know. And little things that can become big, big issues, you know. I mean, this is human beings. So we can have that, you know, with one situation, you can have it with, you know, doubles up with two, and, you know, triples up with three, you know, and so on. So, I mean, a person going into this type of situation obviously has to know that, I mean, they're taking on, you know, the good with the bad. You know, the negative aspects are going to come along with it too. And the most important thing is for the community to understand what constitutes marriage, what the relationships should be, what the obligations are, and work on it. We're not perfect, and as I said, even in the time of Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, where he was that loving, caring, compassionate husband, his wives didn't like him to have more than one, or more than them. So, you know, nature.
Okay, I was about to forego my question because the mother basically touched on it a little bit.
Good one, actually.
But I want to go back to something you said earlier as far as when the husband eats, he feeds his wife, and when he clothes himself, he clothes his wife. How does this tie into my second wife, my third wife, and my fourth wife? Can you break that down for me a little bit?
Actually, well, it's not when he eats, he feeds his wife. Meaning, it means that he feeds her from what he eats. Meaning he doesn't, you know, buy steak for himself and he gives her, you know, fish. Right? I mean, well, if he eats good quality stuff, you know, she should eat the good same, on the same standard as himself. And if he clothes himself, you know, from, you know, civil row, then she's got to have of equivalent standard. That's the principle. So now, if he has two wives, as he takes care of himself, he has to maintain a similar standard for both of his wives in terms of what they eat as well as what they wear. Is that clear?
Yeah, housing and everything.
Yeah. I mean, he can't, you know, put the first wife in a palace and the second wife in a shack. No. You know, if he has a, either he has to sell his palace and get a, you know, a mediocre, you know, two houses for both, you know, or he has to build another palace.
Any questions for the sisters?
We got one right there, right?
Oh, is that coming or is it? In
the instance where a woman marries a man who is adopted by non-Muslims and he converted to Islam, can she uncover in front of the parents of the adopted son? No. Because adoption doesn't, I mean, especially dealing with non-Muslims anyway, right? Even, but let's say it was adopted by Muslim parents. Because this is, I think, even more, you know, significant. Because in front of non-Muslims, you know, it becomes even, in front of Muslims, it becomes even more evident. The point is that adoption is allowed in Islam as long as you don't change the name of the child, meaning you're raising a child in your home. Okay? If the child is brought into the home before the age of 2, and they're still breastfeeding, and the mother breastfeeds that child, then the child now enters into the home circumstance like one of the children. The girls will not have to cover before him, you know, he cannot marry them. But if he comes in after that point, or she doesn't breastfeed him, then the girls will have to cover before him once he reaches puberty. Once they reach puberty, she and he reaches puberty. you know, and he can still marry them. So when a woman marries an adopted son, then the father of that adopted son technically can still marry her. She divorced him, she can marry that father. If he was a blood father, then she couldn't. Or if he had been adopted by way of breastfeeding, then she could never marry his father, his adopted father. Now, second question, is it true that a man who wants to marry a woman is allowed to see her without her hijab? Yes, this is correct. No, without her hijab, no, which includes seeing a part of her arm, part of her feet, you know? Yes. There's evidence. There's evidence for it found from the practice of the Sahaba. I'm just clarifying.
No, I just qualifying, like, what you you say part of her feet.
Up to her knees. This is if she agrees. Okay. If she has no objection, yes. If she objects, if she doesn't want to remove her hijab, show your hair, then you have to either come with it, you know, accept her as she is, you know, as is, or you decide, well, no, I have to see her hair, if not, I'm not going to marry.
Okay, seriously, so, this is known?
Yes. It's not in practice in the mass of the Muslim world today.
Do they know it?
But it's in law. Yeah.
You mean if I say that?
You could request that.
But to be honest with you, in most Muslim societies, they don't know it.
Okay.
Some societies they do. Like in Sudan, for example, if you're getting married, if you've made your proposal, you go to the home of the parents, then the daughter will come out wearing a dress to her knees, you know, her short sleeve, so you can see her arms, you know, without any covering her hair, and she will, you know, serve the...
Where
a proposal has been made, marriage has not taken place. A proposal has been made. Once proposal has been made, then it's permitted for him to see that person. In the Sudan, yes. And there may be other cultures like that where they have, but in most of the Muslim world,
they don't know this.
It's there in the books. If you go back in the books, but it's no longer practiced today.
If the average Muslim know this.
No, the average Muslim doesn't know it. It's in the law books. Of all of the schools of Islamic law, it's there. But it's not known in practice in most of the Muslim world today. If I may, I would like to add something, polygyny, that is not spoken often. But first, if you look at what a monogamous situation is about, for etc. problems, because what happens when he takes a second wife, it is projected onto the second wife, so as having to be the cause of the problems that was already existing before polygyny. Yes, this is, I guess what the person trying to say that oftentimes when a person takes a second wife, the biggest problems, I'll just add this to, which will come into that relationship may not be problems which existed even with the first wife. Sometimes there are problems already existing with the first wife, and they may be, you know, exaggerated with the taking of a second wife, and then the outer community tends to look at the second wife as being the cause, right? This is true. But there is another point that I'd like to raise, and of course we have to keep that in mind too. We shouldn't assume because problems have arisen that this is the cause of the second wife and looking from the outside. But what I would like to raise also is that in most cases, the biggest problems which come when polygyny takes place properly, I mean, not when the brother marries somebody and nobody knows about it and the wife finds out when he brings her home. I mean, not those kind of circumstances, right? Where, you know, he has informed her, she's aware of it, she may not like it, but she's accepted it, you know, and he marries also. The biggest problem tends to come from the women of the community. They feel they must now run to this sister and tell her, you poor soul, the first wife, what he has done to you, why he did this to you, and they go on and on. And then the sister who was taking it okay, she starts to feel, well, yeah, you know, poor me, why did he do this to me, and you know. And they become the source of the problem. You know, really. So this is one thing that, you know, those sisters who find themselves in the situation, be aware that, you know, they have to be careful not to allow the women around in the community to then create problems for them in their relationship. And similarly, the women in the community, they should, you know, be also careful that they don't, you know, become the cause of these problems. You know, because of the fact that her husband took a second wife, it doesn't mean that, you know, she's now in this terrible state and so on and so on and so on. If she comes to you, you know, feeling down and so on and so whatever, then you don't go say, oh, you poor thing, he shouldn't have done this to you. No, no. Instead, you tell her, you should encourage her, you know, be patient, inshallah, Allah will reward you. You know, he's a good brother, he'll take care of you, he's not going to neglect you. So, you know, you should give her words of encouragement to strengthen her, rather than to make her weaker. This is a big, yeah, I think a very major point that we need to keep in mind in these circumstances.
I have a question. Yes, Brother, I mentioned a bit earlier about reason for marriage. I mean, first off, reason, you know, is that, you know, you worship, you know, so that, you know, you won't get into anything else other than anything that your wife or your husband supposed to be helped to you in worship. With that in mind, is there anything or is there any books available now that I can read or give the people that I know about that design? That wasn't the first thing that I got when I was in Islam. That wasn't the first
understanding?
Yeah, understanding that I got. So is there anything like any books that are out now that you recommend them? And that basically clarifying that I thought that was, you know, that first, that understanding first.
Well, I really don't know of any particular book that you know, has focused on this, you know, stressed it. In the book which I co-authored, known as Polygamy in Islam, there is, you know, mention, reference to that there. But as a book in terms of just dealing with marriage per se, stressing that aspect, I don't know any specifically.
I just want to announce, you know, my second question. This is in relation to the Rochelle of a question. This is in relation to, it seems like a carryover that, you know, I know in the marriage life of some non-Muslims, you know, where there's some deep problems within their marriages, they live a lifestyle of, I call it a quiet zone within the home, where despite the fact that they have these major differences, they decide not to separate because, you know, for social status, for so this reason or that reason and so forth and so on. I find that this thing also carries on into some of the Muslim family too. Now, when this happens in a Muslim family, what sort of advice, what sort of attitude one can give to that family? Should the husband take a more possible sort of, I mean, we can't make it together, forget the social status, let's break up the relationship, doesn't matter, you know, with our family or with our children, so let's get a clear position so we can't live a life of misery. Or do we live a life of, let's make it look good to everybody, and but we're not going to sleep together, we're not going to live together, but we just need to be together. So I just want some advice on those kind of circumstances happening within the Muslim environment.
If parents choose this option, that they will just continue the marriage for the sake of the children, or because of the negative impact that divorce has on the community, this is an option that they have the right to take. You know, we can't say to them, well, no, you should get divorced. No. Of course, where the circumstance is affecting their deen, and this is when we say to them, you should get divorced. But if that negative
environment is making them weaker and lesser Muslims, their faith is being weakened, they're neglecting responsibilities, etc. In such circumstance, it is better for them, we should advise them, listen, it is better that you all separate. You know, but where they're maintaining, you know, they're whatever they've decided, they would particularly just prefer to continue like that, you know, they're comfortable with it, you know, they're still able to handle their Islamic responsibilities and the community, you know, but not really aware of what is happening internally, and they want to keep it that way, then, you know, that is their option.
Even to continue with that, you have to ask your question. Because before, you know, I just put my hand at 4 or 5 without that man, and I was to suggest the community where the couple agreed to a mutual divorce, a mutual settlement, a mutual everything. You don't need people calling the house and stirring up that you're going to Africa, right? And stirring up the house, because everything is mutual. Because I mentioned that to somebody before, it is mutual. You don't need to say anything. You don't need to get involved. Everything is mutual. It is for the pleasure of Allah. The children are okay. They agree in the future. Now, out. Thank you.
Two questions I have, really. The first one, really, is deals with something you said earlier, where the dowry has been set. You mentioned in the Gulf that they used to have the dowry so high, people can get married. And now they've lowered it to a level, and it's straight across the board. And what I want to know is that permissible in light of the hadith of the woman question Omar, right? When he tried to do that, to set a limit on the dowry, and she questioned him on it, and she called him on it, and he agreed that he was correct, because she quoted from the Quran that Allah, you know, told us, you know, that you know, he saw that, like, they didn't set any limits on it. That's one thing. Then the other question that I want to raise is the, among the requirements or the reasons why people get married, you mentioned about the genealogy. I think that when couples are planning on getting married, normally, in terms of the family background that was looked at, there are certain genetic traits that you may need to know about. For example, if individuals in the family may have the trait of sickle cell anemia, okay? You know, this is something that should be known, and they should be advised accordingly, that if they have the trait, that there's a possibility that it can be passed on to their children and children get another disease.
So I think the second point was a comment, and I agree, you know, that where there are biological problems in the background of the individuals involved, I mean, this should be known, and should be people getting married should be informed of these possibilities, so people going into the relationship know what can possibly come out of it biologically. The first part, the question, this represents, really, as I said, an agreement made within a few tribes, right? That they have agreed to set this limit, I mean, as a standard amongst themselves, right? Before they had what was, because it is acceptable in Sharia that the dowry be what is commonly accepted in a particular region. It's perfectly okay. If a woman wants to go beyond it, that's her individual right. What happens is that mostly it is done according to the custom of the community, you know, and that is acceptable. It's not forced on her, meaning that she doesn't have any option. You understand what I'm saying? But to go according to the norm of that particular community is also acceptable. They have a principle they call mahar al-nisb in Sharia. That if, for example, a person married somebody and they didn't set a dowry, right? Though it should be done, but it wasn't set. And then the man died, right? Means her dowry was not stipulated, but it is her right. and it should be calculated even before you start to divide up the man's inheritance. So how do they calculate it? They go to this principle of mahar and mithl. So they look to meaning the dowry of people of her similar status, other people who belong to her tribe. What is the norm that the people get in dowry? What is the norm that is given? And then they give that to her. So the idea of having a norm is not against the Sharia. You know, it is not limiting, it's just, this is what parents have agreed upon, right? That they would encourage their daughters to stay within this, you know. Because usually the daughters didn't care. It's the parents, you know, who are saying, no, I won't accept, you know, my daughter to be married for less than this or less than that. So they're saying, they agreed now to, okay, listen, we're not going to put those stipulations anymore. We'll go at this number, you know. But if the daughter prefers more, this is her right to request more.
She prefer less?
Okay. And if she prefers less, that is also her right. Okay, wait. I think, you know, there may be some other people before we run, because see, like, see, a few brothers are sort of monopolizing the questions, right? Are there some other brothers here? Some other brothers who, you know, haven't said a word? I mean, there are no questions on your minds, brothers? Huh? You don't have any questions? You guys? No? Brother, you don't have a question? No? Brother? I just want to make sure, because sometimes, you know, brothers were very enthusiastic, they may just, you know, monopolize, not get others a chance. Okay? Alhamdulillah.
Brother, could you explain to me a little more about destiny of the could you explain that more to me?
Well, I think before we go into that, let's see if there are any more questions on marriage, right? We'll finish the things related to family relations and marriage. And then as a closing question, perhaps we can, you know, look at the issue of our destiny.
You mentioned earlier, Brother Shah mentioned too, about family backgrounds and stuff. I'm not going to go into a general thing like the other brother. I'm personally giving it myself. Right? You can get into a situation like myself. It was asked of me. My family background, right? To me, my family is non-Muslim. I am a Muslim. I am trying to please Allah. If you're going to marry a brother based on his family background, especially a brother that is converted to Islam, that brother may never get married. Because his family is a non-Muslim. Please, you know, break that down for me like your brother said. Break it down to that point.
As I said, looking at a person's family background is legitimate. I'm not saying that, you know, that is the deciding factor. But it is legitimate for a father in discussing with his first, seeing who his family, what kind of family he came from, even though they may be non-Muslim. I mean, if they were, you know, a clan of drug dealers, you know, or they were, you know, respectable church-going folk who were known in the community, you know, with upstanding members of the community, that makes a difference. It doesn't necessarily mean that that person is going to be a drug dealer or that person is going to be upstanding, of course. It's not absolute. But it is something that can be given some consideration, right? That if, for example, in talking with the brother, I find from his expressions and his ideas something which seems to relate back to that drug dealing clan, then that may make me reluctant to marry him to my daughter. Because some of that upbringing may still be affecting that individual, and I wouldn't want my daughter to go into that situation. You see? By understanding the background, it helps me to understand.